You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to MLB Extras Arizona Diamondbacks Edition. I am Allison Foote. I'm here with my good buddy Steve Gilbert. And Steve, we are approaching holidays, which traditionally is the slowest time of year for Major League Baseball, even though there's really no offseason anymore. But now we're post winter meetings. We can kind of look back and see that the Diamondbacks are not really doing a whole lot right now. They do have still some things on their to-do list that they need to figure out before spring training starts. It sounds like maybe some infield decisions that have to be made. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, you know, they still are trying to figure out how they're going to replace AJ Pollock in center field. And that affects the infield because, of course, they also have to find a replacement for Paul Goldschmidt at first base. They have talked about, moving Jake Lamb from third base over to first base and then maybe using Eduardo Escobar at third. But if they can't find a center fielder and they move Ketel Marte instead to center, then that opens up a hole at second, which they might use Escobar at. So that would mean maybe Lamb stays at third and maybe they find a first baseman. So they've got these four positions that they're trying to kind of fill right now with three people and figure out, you know, what the easiest help from the outside would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of years ago, didn't they have sort of too many infielders and they were trying to, I mean, this seems to be like an ongoing theme for different reasons. I just remember us talking a long time ago and it was like they were trying to figure out where to put everybody.
Yeah, it used to be that they had too many infielders. Now they're kind of trying to figure out, you know, what to do with, you know, now that Chris Owings is gone, because, you know, I think you're referring to when they had, you know, both Chris Owings and Nick Ahmed and, you know, who was going to play shortstop, and, you know, Aaron Hill was still there at one time. And so there was Marte. So they had a lot of options. And obviously Owings is gone now and Goldschmidt's gone. So that opens up a couple of holes there in the infield. And one of the guys that filled in a lot and played a lot last year, Daniel Descalso, has left via free agency, signed a 2-year deal with the Cubs. So they don't have, the luxury of being able to plug him in at either second or third this year.
So moving on to the bullpen, they still have some decisions to make there. And you recently wrote that they're not necessarily looking for a closer, but they're not opposed to picking one up either. But by not anointing one now, it kind of gives them some options maybe a little bit later. And, you know, I'm wondering, is a closer even that important for a team that, quite frankly, is not probably going to be a contender in 2019? And also the closing job just being in general, the closer's role being a little bit different, regardless, a little bit different. We've seen so many different combinations of managers using so many different guys in the back end of their bullpen for, you know, kind of making the decision based on the situation. It wouldn't surprise me if we started seeing, you know, teams like the Diamondbacks and others really just not naming a closer and not really caring so much about that part.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I think, you know, they really do feel like next year they can be competitive. And so I think what they're looking at, and one of the reasons they're going to hold off on, you know, anointing a closer for right now, is a couple of years ago they did that and they were able to sign Fernando Rodney towards the end of the offseason at a pretty discounted rate. And one of the reasons that Fernando said he signed with the Diamondbacks is they were one of the few teams that still had a closer spot open and was offering him the chance to be the closer. So part of their appeal to free agents in that kind of situation is not just money, but is, you know, hey, here's the opportunity. We don't have a closer. So if you come here, you're going to have a real shot at it, or, you know, maybe even will be the closer. So that's kind of their thinking. I think right now, Torey Lovello has said if he had to decide right this moment, it would be Archie Bradley. He's certainly somebody that can, you know, profile in that role. And they also have Yoshihisa Hirano, who did some closing last year and has experience in that role. So I think they're just looking to kind of build out their depth maybe there in the back end of the bullpen. And if a closer falls to them, you know, where there's a lot of relievers on the market, and, you know, it's always a game of musical chairs. And if the music stops and there's not enough chairs to go around, they would certainly take somebody with closing experience.
Let's talk about Zach Greinke for a little bit. So he's obviously got many, many more years left for many, many tens of millions of dollars left. And I would imagine that if it was possible to trade him, that the Diamondbacks certainly would look into that. That would be one of the more unmovable contracts in baseball. And Zach is kind of an interesting guy. You don't really know exactly maybe what he's thinking. He's a little guarded. He's talking to the media. But what do you think about in terms of where he sees himself fitting? Does he want to remain with the Diamondbacks? Would it be better for him to be traded to a team that, you know, might be have more immediacy to be winning soon? Where do you think that they are on that?
Well, it's always hard to get a read on Zach, but if you talk to people that know him, they say that he's, you know, very happy in Arizona, that he likes, you know, playing for the Diamondbacks. So given the fact that he has a 15-team no-trade clause, and a lot of those teams are big market teams who could afford to pick up his salary, that's one thing that makes it a little more challenging to trade him. And the other is that the Diamondbacks feel, you know, look, he's been a top-of-the-rotation starter and pitched like it the past two seasons. And they're not really anxious to just dump that salary or pick up all of that salary. So that's another factor as to why he's still on the roster and why I really believe that come opening day, he will still be on their roster. Now, if the season doesn't turn out the way they're hoping for, maybe they look at the deadline and he's a piece that can be moved a little easier at the deadline if he's pitching well and if the team itself is not doing well. I think they could then re-explore dealing him at that point.
Yeah, so when it comes to these teams that you can list as not being traded to, basically it's 15 teams that he can say no to, and he has all the control. But it's not necessarily teams that he will say no to, or am I wrong? I mean, if they were to orchestrate a deal with a team that he's got on his no-trade list, that doesn't necessarily mean he wouldn't there. It's just he gets to decide. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. And you know, one of the reasons I would imagine, again, not having discussed this directly with him or his representation, one of the reasons that a lot of the big market teams or teams that could afford him are on the no trade list is that effectively increases your no trade list because, you know, there are certain markets that just aren't going to be able to afford to trade for him. I mean, Tampa is not going to be able to afford to trade for him. Some of the other smaller Kansas City, you know, some of the other smaller markets just won't have the money. So he doesn't need to put them probably on his no trade list. So certainly if they did decide to move him and it was to a team that wasn't on his, that is on his list, he could certainly waive that. I don't know what he would ask for. Sometimes players will ask for additional money or additional years tacked on to their contract. It just gives them the leverage and a little bit of a lot more control over where they go.
So you had a story during the winter meetings actually saying really that Mike Hazen saying he does not want to go into a full rebuild and he's not looking at this as a full rebuild. I know we've talked about this a little bit. I think that full rebuild sends chills up a lot of GM spines because I think Cubs, Astros, and what they did when they started their full rebuild, which was pretty much resigned to being terrible for 5 years. And so it's hard to publicly ever say that, to break a payroll down to $30 million. And, you know, nobody wants to do that. But realistically, Hazen has a big job to do in kind of just reversing some of the decisions that were made before he got there. And I think that's a very realistic assessment of, you know, how to look at the big picture. So it's key, right? I mean, it's hard to really maintain a competitive team and really try and really in a couple of years think, well, we're definitely going to be in contention for a World Series again.
Yeah, you know, they're really hoping that what they can do is fill some holes this year, maybe move some guys around, be competitive, if not, you know, as good as they were 2 years ago, and continue to kind of backfill the farm system. They've got 7 or 8, I think it is, of the first 80 picks in next year's draft. That's going to be make or break for them. That's going to be a real key thing for them because that's a chance to totally remake their system in a positive way. And they do have a couple of guys, a couple pitchers at the top end of the farm system that could help in the next year or so. And then they've got another crop of position players behind that a couple years from now that they feel can help. So they're trying to kind of bridge that gap and maybe make some moves like the Goldschmidt move to still give them some success at the big league level, but also building out their depth and certainly not trading top prospects just to kind of win now or to patch holes.
Yeah, they can't afford to. Yeah, you're right. This is going to be a huge draft for them. They can't really trade any more prospects if they want to possibly be competitive for in the long haul, right? I mean, their farm system is, where would you rank their strengths right now is in terms of the farm system?
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're thinking is that they last couple of years they had a chance to win, and so they did trade some guys, though it wasn't, you know, their top guys, but that they can't continue to do that and rob the system of its depth anymore. So that's kind of where they're at as far as that goes. You know, again, at the top levels, a guy like John Duplantier, a right-handed pitcher that drafted a few years ago, is ready to break on the scene. Taylor Clark, another right-hander, is another possibility. They have another righty, Widener, who they acquired in the along with in one of the deals, gosh, before last offseason, that they really like a lot. So they do have that pitching at the top end, and then they've got guys like Jazz Chisholm, who's an outstanding shortstop, just played in the fall league. Dalton Varsho, a catcher who just was in the fall league. That they really like as well. And those guys are probably a couple years away on that, as far as position players go.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to everybody for listening to MLB Extras, the Arizona Diamondbacks edition. We'll catch up with you after the holidays. Enjoy the holiday season, Steve, and we'll talk to you in January.
Sounds great, Allison.